UAB Medcast is an ongoing medical education podcast. The UAB Division of Continuing Education designates that each episode of this enduring material is worth a maximum of 0.25 AMA PRA Category 1 credit. To collect credit, please visit uabmedicine.org/medcast and complete the episode's post-test.
Welcome to UAB Medcast, a continuing education podcast for medical professionals. Bringing knowledge to your world, here's Melanie Cole.
Isolated atrial septal defects represent about 7% of all cardiac abnormalities and can present at any age, whereas patent foramen ovale has a prevalence of around 25%. A PFO and an ASD are congenital structural heart diseases characterized by a communication between heart chambers at the level of the wall separating them. My guest today is Dr. Mark Sass. He's an associate professor in interventional cardiology at UAB Medicine. So, Dr. Sass, explain a little bit about patent foramen ovale and atrial septal defect closures and how they are related, if at all.
Well, the septum is the kind of thin-walled structure between the left atrium and the right atrium. So, any defect in that area is considered an atrial septal defect. But the subset is these ones that are called patent foramen ovale. So that's the more controversial area because they're 30 to 40% of the population may have these, and these are the communication you had from birth because that was the way the blood mixed when you were in utero. So these, most of them close, but some of them are opened, and it's how much they're open that creates the issues. And most people who even have open patent foramen ovales don't ever have symptoms. So there's a little flap between the two atria, and that sometimes the only way you diagnose them is by echocardiography, because you can see a little communication between the two atria, and then the way to confirm that is by injecting bubbles, and then you can see bubbles cross. But that's the patent foramen. I mean, there's primum ASDs and secundum ASDs. Those are actually bigger defects, and that's where the septum never forms. So patent foramen ovale are normal embryologically, and that some close completely. It's kind of like a dog door. Like the dog door may be closed and locked in most of them, but some of them are a little bit open, and there's a little bit of way that these bubbles can get through. So everything's technically an ASD because it's a septal defect, but PFOs are congenitally normal structures, and some stay open, some stay closed. And then the ASDs, there's a primum ASD, which is closer to the mitral valve and tricuspid valve. That's a very, very large problem. That usually occurs in people with other congenital problems. And then there's ASDs, the secundum ASDs, where the septum never forms completely, the thin layer. So they actually have a much larger hole. And where the two problems occur is that PFOs, like I said, most PFOs are asymptomatic. The second problem with PFOs is that there is an association with stroke. And then the ASDs are ones that can also be asymptomatic. And I have seen them into my patients that I've seen in their 70s and 80s have no problem. But if they have an ASD that causes shunting, then they can get more flow into their right ventricle, and they have a shunt across that larger defect, and then that needs to be closed because their right ventricle starts to dilate, and then they also become symptomatic. And if it gets to the point where they have such volume overload from this shunting, they can develop pulmonary hypertension and right ventricular failure. So if you see an ASD with those, if you see especially a secundum ASD, which usually the adult cardiologists see, those should be closed just because you want to prevent right ventricular failure and pulmonary hypertension. Primum ASDs are usually recognized as children, and those need to be fixed surgically by a pediatric cardiac surgeon. But sometimes the it's interesting. There are some secundum ASDs that are smaller and don't shunt, and that people just live with them, and we don't do anything unless they have a shunt.
So speaking of recognizing them, and I'd like to ask you about some prognostic tools to aid in early diagnosis so that you get that accurate assessment of the presence and severity of the defect, Dr. Sass. However, have these been associated with migraines? Is there some connection? And sometimes how do you know as a child grows?
Yeah, so for, again, each subset has it. So if you have a large, from the ASD, which has the best evidence for closing, if you have someone who has a large hole, and you may not, sometimes if you have an astute clinician, they can hear a murmur. Sometimes they have EKG changes. They have a widened QRS. And they have like a persistently split S2 you can hear. But sometimes people just are not looking for that, so people don't hear it. But if they have a big hole, but where it usually comes, where we comes to medical attention, is when people are symptomatic. They go, what I used to be able to do is walk up that hill, and now I'm short of breath. So what usually prompts that in this day and age is to get an echocardiogram. So an echocardiogram can see that hole, and to confirm there's a hole, then they inject bubbles in the patient's vein, and you can do it's called a bubble study, and then you see bubbles cross the septum. And then you also look at the right ventricle. If the right ventricle is dilated, then you have, and that would also prompt a invasive study, a right heart catheterization, where we determine a shunt. If they have a shunt of 1.5 to 1, then you're in the area where you're justified to close that hole. But again, most things in cardiology are driven by symptoms. So someone who's short of breath and they have an echocardiogram that kind of is consistent with an ASD, then they get their invasive study, then they get it closed. The PFOs are much, much more difficult to figure out what to do. Again, there's the PFOs, like I said, 30 to 40% of the population has them. Then there's the subset that are totally asymptomatic. Then there's the subset that have association with strokes, and usually that occurs in people less than the age of 55, and usually in this younger 20 to 40-ish age group where they don't really have any other stroke risk factors, but that's the only risk factor. And then there is the association with migraines, and there had been numerous studies done in the early 2000s closing these and trying to prevent migraines, and all those studies were negative, and we've kind of almost closed the book on PFOs as the cause of migraines. There's still some controversy out there, but that book has been usually closed on the migraine aspect of it. And again, there's some people that it may help with, that they've done that where there's Doppler signals coming across like a bubble that is in your body and it goes across the septum and may lead to migraines, but all of those studies in the past were negative. Where the future is this stroke. There was three trials that were done in the late 2000s, and it was CLOSURE-1, the PC trial, and the RESPECT trial. These were randomized trials of closing versus medical therapy in patients with stroke. And the totality, each trial was negative. The meta-analyses of these trials did prove that in certain subsets that people with stroke, that closure may be better. But again, these were a meta-analysis of all the trials. So at 10 years, interestingly, just presented last year, was that the RESPECT trial, the 10-year data came out. And at 10 years, there was a statistically significant difference in people who got closure of the PFOs with the Amplatzer device, and they had less stroke when compared to medical therapy, and medical therapy comprised of aspirin or aspirin and Plavix or warfarin. So that was a, and that led to the FDA approving this for people who had failed medical therapy. And then much more recently, at the recent EuroPCR trial, they had two trials, one done in France and one done by the Gore company with theirs, with their device, the Helix device, and then and their updated version, the CardioForm, and that showed that, interestingly, that the PFO they did have benefit. There was the reduced trial was the one with the Gore Helix septal occluder or the CardioForm device, and they showed that there was a statistically significant difference when compared to just medical therapy. And the other one was called CLOSE, and that was performed by the Health Ministry of France. And neither of these have been actually published in paper form, so they're just online. And those actually did prove to that also proved to that in cryptogenic stroke, as we call it, did prove that medical therapy may be inferior. Again, it wasn't super strong, the data, but again, now we have two new trials that refute the older trials, even though the meta-analysis of the older trials did say that there was some benefit.
So, Dr. Sass, what about indications and patient selection? What are you using as parameters for patient selection criteria?
Yeah. So, in my reading and in my own clinical practice, we look at the first thing is you got to look at the age. If they're above the age of 50, then you associating a PFO as the cause of a stroke is kind of they may have other causes like atherosclerosis of their carotid arteries, atherosclerosis of their intracranial arteries, and if they smoke, that may PFO may not be the cause of that. So we have to look at the age. We also have to look at the way the PFO look. There has been multiple studies show that if it's associated with an atrial septal aneurysm, those patients will be at higher risk. Also, the amount of bubbles going across, if it's a larger amount or a moderate amount, those patients have a higher risk. So you have to kind of look at that too. You have to look at the atrial septum anatomically to make sure that the closure device will fit. Some people develop very fatty septums, and you may not want to put that in there because it can dislodge the closure device. So just even from an anatomic point of view. And then thirdly, you look at, again, patient preferences. Because the data is not like absolutely strong, that they should fail medical therapy. And again, people will say, why do you want to have someone to have another stroke? Because the data is not like absolutely so cut and dry, given multiple methodologic failures of all the different trials, that just to say, all right, one stroke, PFO, put in a closure device, it's just that's not indicated. And then they should also see a neurologist to confirm that they actually had a stroke and there has been talk in the literature about having a heart-brain team. Like we have this heart team approach where we look at every complex cardiac case with a surgeon and an interventional cardiologist. This is the same way we look at every complex stroke and PFO case with a neurologist and an interventional cardiologist.
So in summary, Dr. Sass, what would you like to tell other physicians about recognizing PFO and ASD and when to refer to a specialist and making that decision to treat?
Yeah, I think the key thing is that making sure we have an adequate echo with a bubble study first, and if there is any question, to get a transesophageal echo with 3D imaging. And if you see a larger PFO with significant shunting across that PFO, especially associated with an atrial septal aneurysm, that's the time to refer to an interventional cardiologist, because I think that's the time where we can close these and make the decision, because I don't think these should ever be closed surgically anymore unless they're very, very large. We have two devices, both the Amplatzer device as well as the Gore device, to close both PFOs and ASDs. So in the ASD population, if you see someone with a large defect, they have right ventricular dysfunction, a shunt, and have symptoms, then those are definitively closed. Again, we have a whole host of different closure devices to close these with. If, especially if they're large, you may need to have it surgically repaired, because our devices are not that big, or if they're too big, they can cause problems. But the interventional cardiologist can make that decision. And since we work with our surgeons very closely here at UAB, I would just show them the film if I didn't feel comfortable fixing it.
Thank you so much, Dr. Sass, for being with us today. And a community physician can refer a patient to UAB Medicine by calling the MIST line at 1-800-UAB-MIST. That's 1-800-822-6478. You're listening to UAB Medcast. For more information on resources available at UAB Medicine, you can go to uabmedicine.org/physician. That's uabmedicine.org/physician. This is Melanie Cole. Thanks so much for listening.